Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway. The Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County representatives are here, along with the Tri-State's Civil War Roundtable, and we are joined via the phone lines by a very knowledgeable woman on Lincoln and Lincoln history. Also, I just realized, a master's degree graduate from the University of Illinois, my alma mater. Welcome, Dr. Edna Green Medford from Howard University. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I would love to just be regaled with all of your tales about how wonderful the University of Illinois was, but we don't have time today. We'll have you back at another date. You are coming to Quincy April 28th and 29th to participate in the Quincy Civil War Symposium. Your colleagues, Dr. Tim Jacobs and Beth Young, are also here in studio with me. You've got an interesting title. We don't want to give it all away. We want everybody to come Friday night and listen to your keynote address, but it's called Dog Whistles, Red Meat, and Political Discourse in the Age of Lincoln. What in the world are you going to be talking about, Dr. Medford?
Yes, so, you know, we talked so much today about the fact that our politics has become so partisan and the language is just so strident, as if this is the first time that ever happened. But if we look back at history, especially during the Lincoln era, we see that there's nothing new. You know, they used that kind of language when they were talking about the issues of the day, and, of course, the main issue was about slavery. And so there was a great deal of partisanship there with language that was racist and was very personal. So not very different from what some of our politicians do today.
Okay. And, of course, Abraham Lincoln, an interesting figure. We think of him as the father of freedom, in a sense, having emancipated the slaves. But he did it trickle by trickle. And his attitude, I'm not so sure, was that black people were equal to white people, but just that black people should be allowed to earn their own way in the United States. As a scholar, what is your take on Lincoln?
Yeah, first of all, he was a very complex individual, and that's why historians love to study him. You look at one document and you think you know the man, and then you look at another and you think, my goodness, who is Abraham Lincoln? And I think for me, certainly as a woman of color, as an African-American woman, of older age, I've had a chance to really look at some of the things he has said and try to understand why he was saying them. We have to remember that Lincoln was a 19th century son of the South, white man from the South. He believed he held some of the same kinds of prejudices as did other white men and women, not just in the South, but throughout the country. And so what I think is important about him, though, is that despite his prejudices, he was able to do the right thing, even though he did it to save the Union. But in the process, he helped to emancipate enslaved people as well. And I do need to point out that he's not doing this alone. He's not signing a document and with a stroke of his pen, everybody's all of a sudden free. It's a very complex story.
And, of course, he had to do a lot of maneuvering. Now, interestingly enough, I've always had this, some people, I was just watching a show last night on PBS about a Confederate flag issue still flying in a town and they refused to take it down. Was the Civil War about slavery? Was it about states' rights? Dr. Medford, professor of history at Howard University, what was the Civil War about?
It was about slavery, slavery, slavery. That was the bottom line. All of this stuff about states' rights, yeah, you know, southern states were concerned that they were being overshadowed by the North and that their rights were being tread on. But the problem was they wanted to maintain an institution that was inhumane. There were nearly 4 million black people enslaved at the time of the Civil War. And the war was about preserving that institution. Now, keep in mind, though, it's not that Northern men go to war to free enslaved people. They go to war to save the Union. But the South is fighting to preserve the institution of slavery.
Okay. Well, Beth Young and Dr. Tim Jacobs are here, and if they have any questions for you, I invite them to ask them at this point. I also want to know if you can draw a parallel between what happened in those 1860s, 1850s, 1860s, and what has happened today with the Supreme Court ruling about abortion, because we've now thrown this back into the state, so we have states' rights, and we have some severe divisions. Like, we're in Illinois, where abortion is basically available on demand. Missouri, Iowa, Indiana, the states surrounding us are doing everything they can to outlaw abortion. So this is also causing some of this political strife, a different reason, but similar political strife to what was going on in the between the South and the North. Now it's just a different kind of schism. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I find it interesting that jurisdictions or people in those jurisdictions who complain that they want government out of their bedrooms, out of their lives, are the very ones who are trying to put government back in it, whether it's state or federal. So if you don't want government interference, on the one hand, you should not want it at all. So to be able to say that government can decide what a woman is going to do with her body, that's a very personal issue. What I would do might be very different from what you or anyone else would do, but that is my right to make the decision. And the idea that anyone wants to leave it up to the government to decide, it's just beyond my comprehension.
But isn't that also a similar argument that could be made about slavery? I mean, folks in Illinois didn't want it, folks in New York didn't want it, but folks in Alabama wanted it, so why not just let the people do what they wanted to do? It eventually caused such a political schism, it could not be healed except by the Civil War.
But slavery was something that impacted millions of people of the same race, millions of African Americans. They had no decision in the matter. I don't want to get into, you know, a discussion about morality or anything like that, but certainly we all should be able to agree that slavery was an immoral institution. It may have been legal, but it was immoral. The idea that you're going to enslave people, you're going to sell their children away, you're going to beat them senseless, it is just horrific. So the idea that anyone would be willing to go to war to preserve that kind of institution is just unfathomable.
It is, you know, it is. You're right. By today's standards, and even by standards back then, of course, they were willing to take up arms to right that injustice. When you come to Quincy, you're also going to, I've heard, take a little field trip over to New Philadelphia, Illinois, which was founded by a black man, a free black man, Frank McWhorter. When you're talking at Howard University, where the student population is primarily African American, how much do they know about their own, quote, black American history? Do you think the average kid at Howard University knows about New Philadelphia, about the fact that it's our newest national park site, that this was a place where black people flourished for a time?
They do now. I think when I first started at Howard over 35 years ago, and I am retired now from the university, but when I first started, I think my students were really struggling to learn more about themselves and their history because they'd come from institutions, from high schools, that didn't teach African American history. So they knew nothing about the history of people of African descent in this country. Howard has done a good job of teaching history holistically, so it's not just the history of African Americans, but it's history, you know, world, global history. And I think that's what's so special about our university, because we are a global campus. We have people from all over the world, not just people of African descent or people from the continent of Africa, but we have all sorts of people on the campus. It is predominantly a place of color, but we have many, many white students as well, especially in the professional schools like medicine and dentistry.
What will it take as a retired history professor, what will it take to quell the argument now? Because you're going to be talking about dog whistles, red meat, and political discourse back in the age of Lincoln. We've got other discourse now about how we should be teaching American history, how much African American history, slave history to include. There's somebody has to tell the story, and there's always a point of view. How do you, as an educator, help other educators discover a point of view they may not have any familiarity with at all?
Well, you have to be open to the possibility of learning something other than what you've been taught your entire life. I grew up in a place where the population was 82% African-American, and I still didn't learn anything about African-American history. I became a historian because I came from a rural area. There were these large plantations there, some very famous plantations and very famous people who came from them. And I always wondered where I fit in to that narrative. And so I went out and started reading on my own. But I am proud of the 35 years that I spent at Howard that I taught history holistically. Whether I was teaching United States history or Jacksonian America or Civil War history, I always attempted to include everyone, not just African Americans, not just white Americans, but the indigenous population, women's history as well. I think that the beauty of the American story is that everybody is contributing to that narrative. So we need to include them in the story.
The Civil War Symposium is April 28th and 29th at the Kroc Center here in Quincy. Dr. Edna Green Medford, a master's degree from the University of Illinois, retired Howard University, history professor and department head. You're going to be talking about dog whistles, red meat, and political discourse. We're going to learn what all of that means. But the one thing that you're going to kind of, I think, bring to this discussion is no matter what the political problem is of the day, the discourse can be, well, not pleasant, shall we say. It can get quite heated. And I don't remember being taught much about Abraham Lincoln, like losing his temper or calling Stephen Douglas a bad name or anything. But am I just naive? Was all this kind of stuff going on? Was there a lot of epithet hurling back in that day?
There was for certain politicians, absolutely. Lincoln was not totally above that. I mean, he got angry from time to time, but he was a man who had learned to be very civil and maybe was born that way. His demeanor was different. That doesn't mean that he was not a great politician, because he was. We sometimes forget that he was a great politician, but he understood how to get his point across without being so strident. I think the problem we have today is we don't have respect for our opponents, and so we have to demonize them. And that happened during Lincoln's time as well. And he tried to get around that using all kinds of political maneuvering, but I haven't read anything of him being really so angry that he's saying really nasty things about other people. He may very well have done it. I haven't focused on that. But I think he was a different kind of politician in terms of being controlled. I think too frequently, those who serve us, you know, in government can sort of get out of control because we're trying to win the day. We're trying to appeal to our constituents, to our base. And so we demonize everyone who is not on, well, as we see, on our side. And Lincoln certainly may have used certain language that did that too, but not in the way that, say, his opponent Stephen Douglas did.
Now you're talking about our great Quincy in here. Now be careful there. Let's talk a little bit about what if. It's always interesting in history because history is what history is, and Lincoln was assassinated. What would our race relations today, our southern economy today, what would the United States look like today if Abraham Lincoln had not been assassinated and had been able to be president after the war during the remending of the Union?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit different about, you know, first of all, historians aren't supposed to do that. We aren't supposed to look at, you know, be counterfactual, but it's so much fun to do it. People assume that Lincoln would have been, you know, someone who would have tried to heal the nation, and he absolutely would have tried to do that. But we need to remember that Lincoln was absolutely exhausted at the end of the war. It was a horrific experience for him as much as it was for the country. And I think he would have had a hard time bringing the groups together. I think he would have attempted to assist the freed people because he had promised that he would intervene if things went bad. But I think it would have been too much even for Lincoln. I hate to say it, but the history that we experienced probably would have been experienced under any circumstances because the situation was just so horrific at the end of the war. You had the South being angry that it had lost its property and human beings. You had some Northerners who were vindictive and wanted to punish the South. So I'm not so sure that one man would have been able to solve that problem.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed speaking with you today. I want to thank Beth Young for arranging this interview with you, Dr. Edna Green at Medford. We do have Dr. Tim Jacobs here and Beth Young here. And please, gentlemen and lady, ask a question if you would like or make a comment, because this is your keynote speaker. This woman is coming all the way to be in Quincy. We're so pleased that you're coming.
Oh, thank you.
I'd just like to say, with Lincoln, what did you think about his use of humor to somewhat defuse situations? I felt that he used it very wisely, and this may have been how he kept a civil tone.
You're probably right. Of course, he drove some people crazy doing that, though, because he tended to use that humor in times when no one wanted to be laughing at anything. But I think that was one of his ways of diffusing situations that were getting out of hand. He didn't have the kind of personality where he could be sort of lord over, you know, the folk in the room. It wasn't that he wanted to, he didn't try to put people down. What I found interesting about him is this is a man of great intellect, but has no arrogance associated with it that I've been able to see. And so that and the humor and just his ability to sympathize and to be empathetic, I think that's what makes him different from many politicians that I've studied, at least.
Okay. Beth, would you like to make a comment?
Yes. Anyone who knows me knows that I have a great deal of admiration for Ulysses S. Grant. Could you comment on the relationship between Lincoln and Grant?
Yes, sure. You know, it's interesting. Lincoln spent a great deal of the war trying to find the perfect general, and he finally found that general in Grant. And so I think that I don't know how much he told Grant he appreciated what he was doing for the country, but Grant must have known how important his role had been in saving the Union. We give Lincoln so much of the credit, and we should, but it's people like Grant and the soldiers and folk who were willing to go to war to preserve the Union that really made the difference with Lincoln as their leader. And so I have no doubt that he truly appreciated what Grant had been willing to do, and Grant took a lot of flack for the way he handled battles, but it seemed that Lincoln was quite all right with his way of doing things as long as he was winning the war.
Well, and do you think that Grant tried to follow Lincoln's let-'em-up-easy approach to Reconstruction? Is that a fair statement? Or
I think Grant tried in Reconstruction to continue to heal the nation. There was so much going on, just as one man, as Lincoln, would not have been able to make as much of a difference when you had all of the forces at work during Reconstruction. Grant was not able to do all that needed to be done either. I think that the thing we can give him a lot of credit for, though, is what he attempts to do to get the Ku Klux Klan in check, because they were wreaking havoc in the South with the freed people. And certainly the Grant administration understood the problems there and attempted to do something about it. It is unfortunate that that 1875 Civil Rights Act was overturned, because had that stayed in place and had it been enforced a little bit more effectively, I think African Americans would have had a better shot at their transition from slavery to freedom. But unfortunately, it was overturned in 1883.
Well, we thank you very much for your time that you've spent with us today. It has been delightful to introduce the WTAD listening audience to you. And, folks, we're going to give you all kinds of details about how you can be in the audience when Dr. Edna Green Medford is speaking on Friday night, April 28th. I know you have many things planned while you're here in town. It'll be a short stay, but I hope they can take you around and show you all of our Underground Railroad, our New Philadelphia. I hope you'll get a grand tour of what Quincy is, the home of abolition here in the Midwest, and we really look forward to you coming to town. Thank you, and Godspeed to you, Doctor.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Mary, yeah, could I say one thing? We're going to take her down to the river so that she can see our Ulysses S. Grant marker.
Okay. Very true. Thank you so very much, Dr. Medford. We will be back in just a moment. We've got to take a break. We'll let Dr. Medford get back to whatever she's doing today besides talking to me, and we'll take a break. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD, a very high-powered speaker, retired Howard University History Department chief there, is going to be coming, Dr. Edna Green Medford, to the Civil War Symposium right here in Quincy, April 28th and 29th. Now, obviously, she may be the brightest star, but she's not the only star that will be shining, and the entire public is welcome to participate in this. And so I think we ought to just, Beth Young and Dr. Tim Jacobs, we ought to just talk a little bit about the Civil War Roundtable, the Looking for Lincoln Signature Event Society, and the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County have put this together. Is there a charge to go to this thing? Because that's the one thing I haven't been able to find, is how much this is costing if I say I want to walk in and get a seat at the Kroc Center.
It's free, Mary. And
I can't believe it.
Open to the public. However, I mean, we need to acknowledge our support. This is not Historical Society money. This is money that is donated to the Historical Society from people who want to see our programming continue. They donate for all kinds of programming, this among the various options.
Well, I just can't imagine. It's just fabulous. Now, if you have no interest in the Civil War, this, of course, is not something that you're going to want to do. But the basic thing about the Civil War is there's so many aspects of it. We just heard about the rancorous political discourse, but how about the love? The love between William and Jane Standard and how they wrote their letters back and forth. And you're going to have somebody that's going to be talking about that. Dr. Jacobs, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Dr. Tim Roberts and his wife, Emily. Dr. Roberts is a professor up at Western Illinois University, just north of here. And a couple of years ago, he did edit a book on the Civil War letters of William and Jane Standard. It's very unusual because the letters that came home, we have from the soldiers, but the letters that were sent to a battlefield. And these men were moving, and they often didn't survive the war. And in this case, many of them did survive the war. So you hear the discourse between this husband and wife, and they were not always really in favor of what Lincoln was doing. In fact, Miss Standard wanted her husband to desert at one point. So you're hearing a different aspect of the war, and certainly how it affected people that were just soldiers, the common soldiers, and the wives that they left behind.
You mentioned a unique aspect of this, and Beth, as a historian yourself, you know that, like you said, the letters coming home, if they were saved, they were pretty much preserved. But carrying that around in your pocket while you're wading through the, you know, muck of the swamplands isn't conducive to a preservation. But there are some instances, and from those instances, historians could look at these letters, Can talk about what day-to-day life was at home without your husband there, what life was like when you were in battle. So we can learn a lot, and hopefully this portrayal will almost be like a dramatic reading of the love between these two people the Roberts are going to be doing. Okay, so that's also on Friday night, right after the keynote. Then on Saturday, you have a whole day from 8 o'clock in the morning until right after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Yep. And let's talk a little bit about these very short, and that's the reason I like them. They're very short little vignettes about different kinds of people. I don't know, Beth, if you want to talk about them, but I'm sure you were very capable of speaking of them. So talk about the different people and what they're talking about.
I'd be happy to, and I need to say something I just forgot, Mary. While it's free, the symposium is free and open to the public, they do have to have reservations. There's a seating limit at the Croc. So they need to call the Historical Society, 222-1835, 222-1835. They need to have reservations because of the seating issue. The early bird vignettes, we just decided last time, 18 months ago, to try this, and it went over well. We have four different people this time. The idea is to let local historians talk about Civil War aspects that are related directly to the city of Quincy. Do you want to talk, Dr. Tim, about Dr. Leinbach's presentation? Or
Dr. Leinbach will be talking about Samuel Everett, the first physician killed in the Civil War from right here in Quincy, Illinois. So that would be his, Dr. Leinbach speaking about Dr. Everett.
And that's kind of again, everybody who's a Civil War buff has kind of their favorite reason or maybe an introductory reason why they got involved. You being a physician, you've kind of understand what this man was going through. This is kind of one of your favorite Civil War characters, isn't it?
Well, he certainly is, and I guess being in medicine and my as my vocation, and being a historian as my avocation, it it bodes well because it's something that I have a passion for.
Okay, and then the next vignette we can talk about is Troy Culbertson, who's the director of the Illinois Veterans Home, and wow, we've got that right here, the Soldiers and Sailors Home. That's going to be an interesting talk.
Yeah, he's going to explain how the Civil War, the Veterans Home here in Quincy is a result, basically, of the Spanish-American War and the Civil War, because there were so many veterans that assistance needed to be provided for them after the war. And that's how the Veterans Home here in Quincy grew into being, so to speak.
And now we're, of course, remaking that whole campus over, and it's being renewed. So it wasn't the Spanish-American War. I never thought about that. Was the Illinois Soldiers and Sailors Home built before the Civil War or after the Civil War?
It was after, because it's a result. It grew out of the need for care.
Okay, and then Jeff Van Camp. Chaddock School is celebrating 170 years. There are very, very, very few institutions in Quincy who can say they're 170 years old. Chaddock School is one of them, and even next weekend, they are going to have a wonderful global experience on their campus. But Jeff Van Camp is going to talk a little bit about that history. And we think of Chaddock today with traumatized children, but that's not how it started out. And it was a parade ground for the military, I understand.
I don't know.
So we'll have to find out what Jeff Van Camp says. Okay.
I'm looking forward to that talk because I don't know the history that well. So,
my goodness, I have just done something. I know a little bit more than Beth Young and Tim Jacobs. I really just want to drop the mic and stop right there. But at one time, you know, they had a lot of they were soldiering out there and practicing on their fields and everything. So Jeff Van Camp's going to talk all about that. And then Arliss Dittmer talks about one soldier's mother, and this is a Quincy woman, I assume.
It's Elizabeth Liebrich, and she was a nurse. She traveled to Vicksburg. She and her husband, I think, remortgaged their house even. I mean, they threw all the money they had into helping during the Civil War, and she actually left Quincy to go be a nurse, and her nickname sort of was the soldier's mother. You know, like others, like Mary Bickerdike, different nurses from like Galesburg and Quincy traveled to the actual battlefield, just like Clara Barton and Dorothea Dix. So Arliss is going to talk about Elizabeth Liebrich, who was a Quincy lady.
I can only imagine the horror, you know, like you said, a medical doctor in the field, a nurse in the field, the horror, and knowing that their own children were part of that. So those little things happen early Saturday morning, and then again, we start with another session of great talks. President Grant, and one of the, do you call him an impersonator? What do you call Dr. Kurt Fields? What is his, is he a?
He's a living historian.
A living historian. So he looks, he cultivates a look of General Ulysses S. Grant so that he can become him in our eye when he talks. Is this a correct way? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, he's a retired educator, and when he retired, he had to do something different and figure out what he was going to do for the rest of his...
So somebody said, you look like U.S. Grant, why don't you just pretend to be him?
He had a, he looked like him, and now you cannot, you can't stump him if there's a any question on President or General Grant. And he is probably one of the preeminent Grant impersonators in the whole country.
So if you're ever on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and the Million Dollar Question is a story about Grant, you better have Dr. Kurt Fields as your phone-a-friend.
He would be my first one.
He's the National Park Service official, U.S. Grant, often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's often the U.S. Grant selected to appear in Ohio at various Grant celebrations in Grant's native state, Ohio.
So we're wonderful to have him here. And again, his life with Julia, his wife. So again, not, you know, trudging through the muck or embarking from Quincy into this campaign over into Missouri as he first went into the Civil War, but what was life like with his wife? And he was away from her for a long time.
Which caused some problems, because I think when he was away from her in California before the Civil War is where he got that little moniker for maybe liking to tipple a little bit.
Well, was he a drunkard, Beth Young?
I do not think so at all. I think that Ronald White's biography of Grant simply says we'll never really know. But I know he had problems when he was in California, but I don't believe he was a drunkard. But I'm not an authority on Grant.
Well, as Lincoln said, find out what whiskey he drinks and send all of my generals a case.
Yeah, because for a drunkard, he did a pretty good job. Now, sometimes when you're at these highfalutin, very intellectually charged events, you just want a little moment to recuperate. And so striking up a fiddle tune about 10:15 in the morning on Saturday sounds like the perfect break. We're still going to be learning, but nobody's going to be preaching at us anymore. So talk about that, because, again, Beth, whoever did this, Beth, I think you were primarily responsible. You have put together a program that is so rich and so distinct and diverse that, you know, there's something for everybody in this symposium. So the history of the Civil War through fiddle tunes, I love it. How many fiddle tunes are there that this guy's going to play?
I have no idea, but Dr. Kurt Fields recommended Cody Engdahl, and so we contacted him. And I've had a ton of help, Mary. I mean, it's just been sort of good luck. But a bunch of people have helped arrange this. But you're right, we do try to have a lot of different focuses, as it were. And a lot of times I think when people hear Civil War Symposium, they think it's all battle plans, maneuvering, blood and guts.
Right.
And we try to have something military, although actually this time we're a little light on the military. Maybe.
You are. You're more about romance and
well,
political discourse.
The social and cultural history.
Social and cultural.
And how Quincy fits into that. So.
And also something that happened probably before the Civil War, which on Saturday morning, April 29th, Dr. Sam Wheeler is going to be talking about a controversial legal case that Abraham Lincoln, you know, he was a lawyer, and the Matson slave trial. Who can give me the two-minute synopsis of what we're going to learn there?
Well, I can't give you a two-minute synopsis, but I can tell you that Dr. Sam Wheeler is an excellent speaker. And
absolutely.
You will learn a great deal more than you knew when you started. And he also has a wonderful delivery. I remember when he was talking about Grant a few years ago, he started by invoking Groucho Marx. So you just never know where he's going to come from.
But, we all think of Groucho Marx as the foremost Grant historian, so I think that's very appropriate.
Well, Groucho Marx often asks people who's buried in Grant's tomb, and so Sam Wheeler took off from there. But he will take you through a journey, and you will learn something because he's an excellent historian and an excellent speaker.
And we forget that Abraham Lincoln was an excellent lawyer.
Absolutely.
And almost no matter which side of he could... I mean, they'd sometimes just go, who wants to, here's a whole bunch of people that need a lawyer, who wants to represent this guy? And whether you were, you know, pro or con, you just pennied it up and flipped the nickel and took sides. And then we're going to run out of time, but we just are enough time to talk about the dedication ceremony. You know, Quincy has a very, very rich Jewish history. It's kind of sad that our synagogue has closed because Jewish people have always been a part of Quincy's history, and one of the most famous is Abraham Jonas. And at the Valley of Peace Cemetery there on North 30th, and a lot of people drive by there and probably don't even notice that cemetery. It's kind of small. But you're going to have a special dedication that day. And why is that?
Well, I think Abraham Jonas has a wonderful life, and we need to celebrate that. He has a very large stone out there because he was the first Grand Master of Masons in Illinois. And he just did so much. He was a friend of Lincoln. He had five sons that fought in the Civil War. And being a friend of Lincoln, four of those boys fought for the Confederacy. So when you think of a house divided, you think of Lincoln, but I think of our own Abraham Jonas right here in Quincy, Illinois.
And there will be a dedication that day, and the public is welcome to come out to that. Special marker will be placed, and people will learn a little bit more. Folks, it's free. God, I can't believe you're bringing these people in here. This is just, and to offer this free to our community. Tell everyone you know that has any interest in the Civil War, politics, social customs, romance, medicine, you know, the just all different things. The Quincy Civil War Symposium, sponsored by the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County, the Tri-State Civil War Roundtable, and also, of course, the Looking for Lincoln, and all the private donors who have made it possible for Friday night, April 28th, and all day Saturday until 2 o'clock, when they will convene then at North 30th Street at Valley of Peace. Again, it is free, but seating is limited by the crock capacity. So call today if you want to be part of this, 217-222-1835, 217-222-1835 to register. I just have time to say thank you, Beth Young.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tim Jacobs. You're always bringing great people to our community. This is enriching our community. We're going to have tourism boosts because of this. And I'm really excited. I can't wait till you just knock the socks off that Howard University professor with what we've got here in our community. She's going to go away. Maybe she'll write a book, another book that needs to be written about Free Frank McWhorter. We'll never know. Thank you so very much. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Okay.
You're
very
welcome.
Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you.